Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. And I am joined by my co-host, Ray Pritchard of Keep Believing Ministries. Ray, tell our listeners a little bit about Keep Believing and website and what you got going on this year and what folks can find at that website.
You know, if you surf on over to keepbelieving.com, you'll find an online repository of biblical resources, podcasts, Q&A, sermons, Bible studies, outlines, all of it free. We resource the body of Christ worldwide, and you know, our web traffic has been kind of off the charts the last couple of weeks because pastors around the world need Christmas sermons and New Year's sermons and Bible studies and so on. And we just invite anybody who's looking for some encouragement, and we could all use it these days, come on over to keepbelieving.com and check us out.
And Ray, you by the way, you always have great stuff available. And you not only have like articles and stuff, you have little books and pamphlets
sure.
available for download.
Tons of. We were doing books for a while and found out that we're living in an age when you got to make it short and simple and sweet because the days of the 700-page book are kind of gone. But we found if we can put out these little pamphlets about how to be filled with the Spirit or when the foundations crumble or how to love your enemies. We just did one called Coming Down the Home Stretch, My 25-Year Plan. That's been very, very popular. We give those away. So just come to keepbelieving.com, and there's a section for books and then a subsection called booklets. And it's all free for the body of Christ worldwide. So come and check it out.
All right, Ray. Thank you. Well, we want to welcome Steve Jordahl, who usually is in the studios with us for this third and final segment of Today's Issues. Steve is a reporter for One News Now. You want to go to onenewsnow.com and find some of the great articles that our team has written there. You can also, Steve, right, you can get that delivered to your email box once a day.
You can sign up at onenewsnow.com for a newsletter that comes once a day, and that's all you'll get from us. We're not going to do anything with your information except for send you valuable news and information that you can use.
Right. All right.
Steve, hey, I got a question for Ray, though.
Yeah.
Because you said you had his pamphlet on how to love your enemies.
Yes.
That's hard. Do you think it'd be possible to renegotiate with God about that one? Because
I've tried.
That's hard.
I've tried renegotiating. He is not willing to back off his terms.
Oh.
That love your enemy stuff,
yeah.
You really meant it, you know?
Oh, man.
No, I would just say this. I'm 61 years old and have been in the ministry in one form or another since 1982. And I have learned as a minister, right? So
yep.
One of those guys
right.
That's supposed to know this kind of stuff. And, you know, God does not blink. He doesn't move off his off his will.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
One bit. You can't argue with him. Arguing gets you nowhere.
Right.
Bargaining gets you nowhere. Tears sometimes gets you somewhere, but he won't move off his righteousness.
You mean we got to love our enemies no matter what?
That's what I'm thinking.
All right.
A deal's a deal.
That's right. So good luck with that if you want them to renegotiate. So.
No. Yeah.
All right, Steve, but nice try.
Okay,
yeah.
Hey, let's go back. I know you guys talked a little bit about the rising problem of anti-Semitism in this country and abroad. Couple things. On December 30th, just a couple days ago, the House is still in session, technically.
Right.
They gavel in every morning for what they call a pro forma session. It's basically a prayer. There's no votes. There's maybe some two-minute speeches as they have it if members are in town and want to. But it's basically they keep it in session. That way, one of the things it does is it keeps the president from being able to do recess appointments.
Right.
And this isn't necessarily an anti-Trump thing. It's just all Congresses do that to kind of maintain control of the government as they see fit. So. But during this pro forma session on December 30th, Rabbi Arnold Renzikoff opened the house in prayer, as every morning somebody does. And this time it was Rabbi Renzikoff, who's done it many times. This is the first time on the House floor that the rise of anti-Semitism and religious violence has come up. And it came up in his prayer. And I wanted to have you listen to just a piece of this prayer. This is Rabbi Renzikoff on December 30th from the House roster.
With this decade's last House prayer, we give thanks for progress, look ahead with hope, but with eyes wide open to prejudice, hatred, terror that remain, fueling violence like the anti-Semitic Hanukkah party attack Saturday, the Texas church attack Sunday. Praying, Almighty God, for strength to dream the bravest dream our dreamers dreamed, our people dreamed.
Yeah, so
that's interesting. You know, Ray, I liked what the rabbi said about having hope, but also going into the new year with eyes wide open to the reality of fallen human nature, which can sometimes do the most evil of things.
First of all, I'm surprised, I guess heartened, though. I mean, surprised to hear, Steve, that this is the first time, did you say, the first time that anti-Semitism has ever been mentioned in a prayer of this nature?
Yeah, in a prayer, became the first to decry American anti-Semitism in the traditional prayer as he urged the nation to keep his eyes wide open. This is according to the Washington Examiner. Well, so I know that it's been mentioned by legislators over and over in terms of discussions about gun control or about violence, but this is the first time in the traditional opening prayer.
And so he put that in his prayer and then linked it up with what happened down at in White Settlement, Texas, the shooting down there. And rightly mm-hmm. so, that it's becoming more and more dangerous to go to a house of worship here in America. I don't think we're at the end of these kind of incidents. There's a lot of crazy and disturbed people out there. And by the way, as a side note, guys, there's been a lot of discussion over the weekend about the church shooting. And some people have said, it's not a Christian thing to shoot at a man who's shooting up your own congregation. But I don't understand that line of reasoning, that the first duty of spiritual leaders is to protect.
Right.
The children, the old folks, the teenagers, protect the people who come there for worship. And I can find nothing wrong with what the man did who shot the intruder, who himself was killing people. So God bless the man. I'm glad he knew what he was doing, and I'm glad he didn't miss.
As a matter of fact,
just wanted my voice to be heard.
Listen, I'm hoorah for that, Ray. I don't understand the sentiment either about it's not a Christian thing. That man with a shotgun, I have no idea, maybe you do, Steve, how many shells he had. I mean,
no,
shotgun
I
shells
haven't
heard. He had. But he wouldn't have stopped killing people in cold blood until he ran out.
Yeah, no, it was the beginning of random attacks against people in that church. And until someone stopped him, the police showed up, or he ran out of shells.
Yeah.
To your point, Ray, Robert Jeffress, pastor of First Baptist Church in Dallas, was on with Fox News. He kind of had the same sentiment. I want you to hear this. It's cut eight.
Well, it doesn't change what we do, because we've always had a plan like this church in Texas does. And, you know, Leland, the great hope of the Christian message is that one day evil will be eradicated from this world when the Lord returns. But until that time, evil is a reality that has to be confronted and its effects diminished wherever possible. And I think every pastor, every rabbi has a duty to protect his congregants by making sure there's a plan of action just like this Texas church had to deal with acts of violence when and if they occur.
You know, Ray, let me toss this over to you, and I don't want this to be a big discussion on this just simply because we don't usually have much time in this third segment, but I'm guessing the Christians who are saying this, or I'm guessing they're Christians, they wouldn't have a problem with the police coming in and shooting this man.
Right.
And the police are a part of the government, and Romans 13 says government is a minister on behalf of God. So God's okay with these individuals being stopped by force. I'm not sure why the fact that you have a Christian who's not a police officer should make any difference theologically. I'm not trying to overcomplicate this, am I?
You know, part of this, Ed, is how the world has changed. When I went through seminary in the last century, a long time ago, 4 years of Greek and Hebrew and, you know, exegesis and church history, I don't remember even 1 minute devoted to the question of church security. I don't remember anybody saying anything about that. So I can understand some people going, well, what's changed? Well, look, what's changed is the world around us has right. changed. As society has devolved, as standards have lowered, as crazy people have gotten more active in their crazyism, it is now incumbent upon every, whether it's a church or a mosque or a synagogue or any place of worship, but I'm speaking of Christian churches here, it's incumbent upon the spiritual leaders to be able to say to the young mothers and to the parents and to the old folks, if you come here, we will do whatever it takes to protect you. Because I tell you what, if it gets out in the community, it's not safe to go to a church there. You're taking your life in your own hands. Nobody is going to be going to church at all. So right. I think churches are doing exactly what Robert Jeffers has done there at First Baptist. They're taking security seriously. I'm really glad that man was there trained. And I want to say again, you hate to see somebody killed in a church. Hate to see somebody killed anywhere, right? It's not right. that you glory in the death of this man, but this intruder, he was there to kill. So I'm glad when the security man took aim, I'm glad he didn't miss.
Yeah.
Right. This shooting, as all the others, have been used for political fodder, probably by both sides, but mostly the mainstream media. I want to draw your attention to a tweet or an editorial, I should say, that USA Today put out, where the gist of it was, the guy that shot the instructor that shot this gunman was the perfect person at the right time because he had training. But they said there were six or seven other people that drew their guns, and we don't know anything about them, and it's terrifying that many guns are in church. So even on the heels of a very heroic and successful stopping of a potential mass tragedy, the mainstream media and those who are looking for gun control find a reason to be terrified about it. Dana Lash had something to say about this. I want you to hear this and then get your thoughts on this. Cut two.
I was mystified as to how anybody could think that law-abiding people simply protecting themselves could be terrifying. I think it's terrifying that it looks like it's another attempt by legacy media to go and dox individuals or to try to find out information about individuals, and it's none of their business. The fact that you had all of these other individuals, what was it, like 5 to 7 other people who were also lawfully carrying arms and who drew their arms in anticipation of having to neutralize a threat, that no one else fired, everyone else held their ground, they all acted as they should have, demonstrates some level of mm-hmm. skill and training.
All right, now Dana Lash used to be with the National Rifle Association,
former NRA. Former spokesperson for NRA.
Okay, now she mentioned, and so I'm asking if this was USA Today or others in the mainstream media, doxing people and trying to find out, are people in the media trying to find out who these other 6 or 7 at the church were and trying to publicize information about them? I wasn't sure what she
was
saying.
USA Today didn't quite go that far, but what they did say is, we don't know who these people are, and therefore it's probably dangerous. We should probably find out who's carrying guns and such. I don't know. I think it's the first step towards doxing. I didn't see USA Today to call for the release of the names and the background of these people, the other people that drew on this the shooter.
Anybody surprised that there were 6 or 7 people
in Texas?
Exactly what I was going to say. They've never been to church in Texas.
Right. Well, and we talked about this earlier in the week, that it does. These people do need to be trained. You don't want people in church in a situation like that just standing up and unloading a magazine because people are fleeing. You could hit innocent people.
Right.
So that is part of the training. I'm guessing that this church was well-trained because, as Dana Lash mentioned, not only did the former FBI agent, what was his name? It'll come back to me. But anyway, he one shot took this guy out, obviously well-trained, but the others showed restraint because there were people around who were innocent. And so it seems to me they did it the right way.
Jack Wilson was his name. And ostensibly, I believe, and maybe you know, Ray, but if you get licensed to do a concealed carry, which is what you basically do. No one comes with a holster and a gun exposed at church.
Right.
You have to be trained on the use of that weapon.
Sure.
As part of the, getting the license to conceal carry, in most states, I believe, is training on how and when to use it safely.
Right.
So I think that's kind of along with the deal if you get the carry permit.
Well, one of the bigger takeaways here is that every church in America ought to have a security plan. Don't wait until after something happens.
Yeah.
You just don't know what's going to happen next Sunday or the next Sunday, whether it's a country church or it's a suburban church or some kind of downtown church. When I pastored in Chicago years ago, we had a pretty well thought out plan, but it's not as well thought out. It was pretty well thought out for then.
Yeah.
But today, every church, if you got 50 people or 5,000, it doesn't matter. You need to take seriously the issue of security, because these incidents are happening more and more often.
The church I attended in Colorado Springs a few years ago when I lived there, in 2000, I think it was 2007, a gunman came to a mega church in Colorado Springs, New Life Church. The pastor there is Brady Boyd, and he started shooting. He actually killed two sisters, young girls, in the parking lot. But an off-duty security lady who was on their team drew down on him and killed him. And so, or at least disabled him. I think she killed him. But after that, every church in Colorado Springs had a uniformed, and to this day has a uniformed police officer standing in the lobby. And it doesn't disrupt a thing. It's a safety piece of comfort, as well as having an in-house security team that's trained, that are armed, that are trained and armed. This on-duty, uniformed police officer gives you a sense of security and a sense of safety, and people get to know him. They bring him donuts and coffee, and he's just kind of part of the family. The family, yeah. It's a incredibly important thing.
Well, we can say it this way. You may not need that person, quote, need them 99 Sundays, but on Sunday number 100, you're going to be glad he's there or she's there when you really need them. And it's not just about gunmen popping up in the service. You have all sorts of disruptions. You have strange people come in who may not have destructive tendencies, but they are going to become disruptive for other reasons inside the service. You need a plan to handle that too.
And I think a gunman who comes and maybe cases a church and sees a uniformed security or a uniformed police officer there probably is going to choose a different church.
Right. Going to keep moving.
And just as an aside, the policeman has his radio there, and he's in touch very quickly with first responders if, for example, you have a medical emergency there. It's easy to do as well. So,
All right, good. What else we got?
All right. I want to we've been talking about this impeachment saga that's going on between the House and the Senate. Nancy Pelosi kind of allowed her people to vote on the articles of impeachment. She is holding on to those. We don't know if she's going to give them to the House. It's still unclear whether he was actually impeached if she does not give these articles to the Senate for a trial. But two Republican congressmen, Andy Biggs of Arizona and Matt Gaetz of Florida, report that they heard Nancy Pelosi on the House floor corralling the Blue Dog Democrats and those representatives from Trump districts, and saying that if they did not come around and vote for impeachment, that they would not get any support from the Democrat Congressional Committee, the DCCC, that raises funds and sanctions people who are running for the House. It's the official Democrat roster of candidates. So strong-arming them. I guess it doesn't surprise anybody, but she had made a statement that said, this is a vote of conscience. We're not going to whip this vote, meaning we're not going to count heads. We're not going to turn arms, just however people think. But that's not exactly what happened.
Well, I'm not surprised. I mentioned this in our story meeting this morning. I'm not surprised that Nancy Pelosi is doing this. I did not know that she had said, no arm twisting, you know, this is just whatever you think is best. But as it turns out, she couldn't lose this vote. That's why I'm not surprised. She could not lose Democrats on this vote. She had to make sure that this effort did not fail. It would have been hugely embarrassing. Ray, I'll give you the final word on this, unless Steve wants to say something else. But she could not afford the political catastrophe of the Democratic leadership saying, we have got to do everything to get this guy out of office. He's a threat to the Constitution. And then wind up losing 25 or 30 Democratic votes, especially when the Democrats had not made this a bipartisan push for impeachment.
It's already turned into a disaster, Ed. And it seems to me, and I'd like to hear you guys' opinions about this, I'm trying to think to myself, I have been all weekend thinking about, why is she holding on to these articles of impeachment? What is the political game she's playing? How can she gain by holding on to the articles? Is she going to dump them? What are her options at this point? Does holding on to it make any sense politically at all?
Well, I think I'm going to give my opinion. Steve, you chime in. I think what she's doing is she realizes, she knows, and did know, this is no surprise, she knew that this was not going to be bipartisan. This was going to be, the impeachment process was going to be extremely partisan, extremely biased. They were not going to allow the president or his supporters in the House to put up an able defense or to call the right kind of witnesses. So this was a show trial. She knows that. Now she understands, and I think has understood all along, that the Senate is going to play the same game that the Democrats played in the House. The Republicans in the Senate are now going to play the same game. And from what we've heard Lindsey Graham say, and Mitch McConnell, this is going to be quick. It is going to be along party line votes because Democrats, that's what you did in the House. And I think this is Nancy Pelosi's last ditch effort to try to get more show trial stuff in the Senate. They want to try to put some political pressure on the Senate to try to let them come to the Senate trial and do their thing there. Steve, what do you think?
Well, I think it gives her some options. First of all, if she plans on holding these through the 2020 election campaign, the Democrats can go out and say President Trump has been impeached.
Right.
And there is no way that President Trump can say, yes, but I was acquitted handily in the Senate because it was a show trial.
Right.
So she has kind of that sticking point. You're absolutely right that she that there is a political calculation. She's kind of reached the end of her good news. Everything from now on is going to be bad news for her.
Right.
The articles of impeachment, I believe, are going to be valid through this Congress. Nothing impels her to give those things over to the Senate before the end of the 115th, I think it is, Congress. So starting in 2021, after the 2020 elections, you'll have a new Congress. The articles of impeachment have to be revoted on and refiled if they're going to do it then. So she has a little time to wait. It wouldn't surprise me if she decides to wait until later in the election cycle when President Trump looks like he's kind of gaining momentum to all of a sudden have this go to the Senate and, oh, look, he's on trial just to damage his election hopes.
Well, it is a political gamble because, to your point, it's an excellent point. She does not allow the president to get out of this at the beginning of the year when the Senate dispenses with it. The gamble part is, though, that if she holds that and goes too far into the year, then I think it becomes even more politically damaging to the Democrats because then it's clearly then a partisan thing. So maybe this is part of the calculation and part of the gamble that Nancy Pelosi is making.
Yep.
Well, that's all the time we have. Hey, thanks, Ray, for being on with us.
Thank you, Ed.
And, folks, thank you for listening to today's issues here on American Family Radio. More great programming directly ahead on American Family Radio. God willing, we'll see you tomorrow.